A65. Number 3A.
We will try to tackle the question of the levels of science, that third big category in being. And naturally, one should always be aware of what is the purpose of such a category. So that one is quite clear right from the beginning, what is involved in that whole subject, and understand it and not just take it for granted because the teacher says so. So let us think a little bit first about the necessity for these levels, the purpose of it. And I think one of the main characteristic why we should have such levels of science is that without that category, if we already have the category of the 7 and the 4 ways of operation, that without that, it seems that the textbook is not consistent, that the textbook appears to be contradictory, that the textbook doesn't seem in many ways to make sense. You look at me rather astonished, but that's the case, and that's the need for levels. Now, how can we explain that? Or how can I talk around it a little bit? See, we always have noticed in the course of 100 years of Christian Science that this textbook is a textbook that appeals to the thinker. The time for thinker has come. It appeals to the scientific thinker. And we have always noticed that when scientific thinkers from the world take up the study of Christian Science or begin to read the textbook, they, in most cases, they put it aside and say, this textbook is contradictory. This woman doesn't know what she's talking about because she contradicts herself. It's not so much that they may not be in agreement to her theology, which is quite different than old-time theology, but that they feel that the author herself contradicts herself in the statements. And these people who say that are not the dumbest. They are the ones that read with some kind of logic and intelligence. You say, well, how could they say such a thing? Well, let us just take a few examples from the textbook. The textbook will say, for instance, that God knows no disease. Doesn't the textbook say that? Yes. But on another page, Mrs. Eddy would say that God heals disease. Now, for a logical thinker, this is a contradiction. If God does not know disease, or if there is no disease, as another statement runs, then it is a contradiction to say that God heals disease. How can he do that? It is a contradiction. Absolute contradiction. Or he may read on one page that matter does not exist. There is no matter. Matter does not exist. And on the other page, he reads that matter is a state of mortal mind. So it exists. Or that matter is the objective state of mortal mind, so it is something. So either does matter now exist or doesn't it exist? We have other examples, many, many actually. They go into the hundreds, but the most outstanding one would be that God creates all That's a nice theology. God creates all. God creates all, not man create all. There's nothing besides God as a creator. And then she says, mortal mind creates all disease. So apparently there is another creator. This is a blunt contradiction in the old classical reasoning. See, I introduce quickly the reason that brings us then to the levels. He is right, these thinkers are right, as long as they think in the old classical way of reasoning, which has always been one-dimensional. In the one-dimensional reasoning, that is, if you only think on one dimension or one level, then you can have these contradictions. And therefore, on a one-dimensional level, these would be considered as contradictions, and therefore not logical. And Mrs. Eddy is very hot on the point that her discovery is divine logic. But they may overlook the fact that she says it's divine logic and not human logic. Let's take other statements from the textbook, where perhaps she gives in many ways the sense, really, that all is perfect, all is at the point of perfection. And then she speaks about the perfectibility. Well, if something is perfect, it does not need to be made perfect. There is no perfectibility, because perfectibility means something is imperfect but can be made perfect. So this is, again, a blunt contradiction. She speaks a lot about the law of causality, cause leading to an effect. And then on the other way, she speaks a lot about the immediate revelation of idea, namely the law of spontaneity, that everything happens at once without any long-drawn sequence of cause to effect. Or she says that error must be handled, that we must analyze, uncover, and annihilate error. And on the other hand, she says there is no error. Well, if there is no error, you can't analyze an error and uncover error and annihilate error if there is no error. Again, contradiction. And so I think we could go on and on and on and would be able to show that if we read the textbook from the standpoint of one-dimensional reasoning, then so much in the textbook is contradictory and therefore unacceptable for the thinker. So that has always been one of the big contention against Christian Science. Now, as far as I can remember looking over the history of Christian Science, one has tried, naturally, to reconcile these contradictions in the teaching of Christian Science. And I think one has always done it in the following way, and I remember that John Dawley did it this way when I went through class at that time, that the explanation is, well, these are two, one must consider two different standpoints. So it was already indicating that there are two levels from which to reason. And the answer was, well, you have to see when Mrs. Eddy speaks from A, the absolute standpoint, B, from a relative standpoint. So from an absolute standpoint, we could say that God knows no disease. From a relative standpoint, we could say that God heals disease. So in this way, within the ranks of Christian Science, one has tried to resolve this contradiction just by introducing two levels, two standpoints. And has introduced something that is important and that was not common in the ordinary way of thinking. So we have two standpoints were introduced. But then as one went on and on over the years, one began to see that actually Mrs. Eddy does not so much or talk about the absolute standpoint. She does that, but actually never does she call something a relative standpoint. That term of relative is actually not in her writing. It was the way that in a transitional period we could find some kind of reasoning things out. And it is only after the war, World War II, or even during World War II, you know, World War II was for the spiritual development in the world a terrific progressive period. We must not forget that. That war cost perhaps 50 million people's life, but spiritually it was one of the most tremendous spiritual awakening all over, not only in Christian Science, because most of what has been shown was during those years by John Dawley, but also in other science. There was a tremendous overturning and change of paradigm in that time. So we also must look back on that history of World War II as a tremendous positive era. Not the happening was positive, but the era was absolutely positive. And we can see that that most of the big new concepts on which we build, like cybernetics, like Gestalt theory, like structure, like matrix, and so on, that was all born in during that period. So also in that period, it was that one began to see that we really should be able to explain these contradictory statements through the statements of the textbook itself. Not by we introducing an explanation like absolute standpoint, relative standpoint, but by taking the textbook itself and let the textbook itself explain how these contradictions can be resolved and to be shown as very logical. And that was the introduction of the four levels of science. Mr. Dawley, around about 1943, I'm not now exact, maybe 42, about 43, 44, he began to see that actually in the different use of the term science in the textbook, Mrs. Eddy gave the key to interpret these apparently contradictory statements as being logical if one would approach the textbook from a multi-dimensional standpoint or concept. It asked for a change in the paradigm from the one-dimensional logic to a multi-dimensional logic. And that multidimensional, dimension is the same term as level, is brought out by Mrs. Eddy by introducing those levels of science, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. These are the four levels or dimension or standpoint, whatever has been called at that time, that have given the answer to these apparent contradictions. So we can see that this third category is absolutely necessary. Or else, with the first and second category of the seven synonymous terms, the four sides of the holy city, we would have a lot of misunderstanding, misconceptions, misinterpretations, contradictions, etc., etc. And only when one introduces the levels, things fall into place. So these levels are actually super important in order to understand the textbook at all. I was just saying that at that time we had various terminology for these levels. We talked about standpoint, from the standpoint of science, from the standpoint of divine science, about dimensions, then about the plane of divine science, in the plane of Christian science. I talked about levels of science and divine science. And therefore, at this point, perhaps I should introduce a little explanation, because after all, you are afterwards going out into the world and have to explain these things, and you should know a little bit about also about the terminology. The terminology at the beginning was not consistent in our writings and in our talks. That's all right, because when a new idea breaks in, you just try to express yourself the best we can. And perhaps you know that I have been criticized very much by introducing the term level, because it could as well be called dimension or standpoint. Now, the reason I did this is the following, that Mrs. Eddy has already talked about the dimension, about the line, plane, space, and fourth dimension of spirit, meaning the four sides of the holy city. So she already has chosen the term dimension for the four sides of the city. Therefore, I had to find a new term that would apply to the levels, to the higher and lower dimension, so to say. And therefore, because the world was using as a term level, the world was talking at that time, began to talk about the levels of consciousness and the levels of experience, and the higher level and the lower level, I choose the term level, just as Mr. Dawley would sometimes talk about the plane. And I didn't like plane, because Mrs. Eddy already used that term for the line, plane, and space, and fourth dimension. And this is the reason why I felt I must have a unique term that would indicate the levels. So I used that, especially because more and more in the world there was a cry, why doesn't Christian Science use the terminology of the world, which the world uses? Why can't we talk the way the world talks, so that the world can understand us? And therefore I took that. I would have loved or preferred to call it dimension, because in the world they were talking about dimensionalism. Dimensionalism in contrast to reductionism. But as Mrs. Eddy has already used that for the foresight of the city, I had to choose another one that was that would distinguish this sense, the levels, from the foresight of the holy city. Yes, the world was beginning to talk about levels, or stratas, or dimensions. Stratus was very much used in the German field. Dimension was much more used in the English-speaking field, like that big book of Arthur Koestler, where he had a great conference with the leading scientists of the various science, and where they were discussing dimensionalism versus reductionism, and introduced really into the world the sense that we must start to think in dimensions. So that would have been a wonderful term, and if sometimes I use this term, dimensionalism or dimensional ontology, it's actually the term the world uses for what we call levels. And it's a very easy term, and I'm sorry that Mrs. Eddy already had picked it out for herself to depict something else. You know, now, symbols are not reality. Reality is the idea, and therefore we must not be hooked up on symbols and be flexible enough to hear the tonality. So when we speak sometimes about dimensionalism, we know it's level consciousness. I was saying that during World War II, John Dolly began to see these levels of science. And it was during those years, too, that actually in many other fields of science, they began to realize that they must approach their subject, whatever their subject was, in a dimensional sense, in a level sense. Why? Because, as we see, dimensional reasoning gives us a logic that solves the many contradictions that we have in life. And one of the examples that are most illustrative for us is really that example that Koestler gave in his book with the symbol of a cylinder. And you know that symbol very much from my teaching and various teaching. So we just established that symbol quickly for us so that we can refer back, where he showed if we have a cylinder, and the cylinder has three dimensions, and that if we project that cylinder to a plane of two dimension, a plane has always two dimension, that gives another phenomena. If we project that cylinder horizontally to a wall, it gives a rectangular picture. If we project that cylinder from the top vertically down, it gives a circle, just to take these two illustrations, showing something very important. It shows that the cylinder, the rectangular figure, the circle figure, that they do not contradict each other as long as we know from where they come. As long as we know that the rectangular figure and the circle come from a translation or a projection from a higher level to a lower level, from the three-dimensional level to the two-dimensional level, that they do not contradict themselves. So that we can see that if we always go out from the translation, that various phenomena can be identical, have identity. This is terrific. Can you see? In the old logic, identity meant when one thing was absolutely equal to another thing. That was identity. In the dimensional thinking, there is identity between many different phenomena, that have no resemblance at all, and they are yet identical in so far as they are translation on various dimensions, on various levels. Well, that makes a lot of difference. And actually, you know, as I have shown a few years ago through that whole week's talk on the oneness of being in the 16th chapter of Science and Health, actually we can never understand the oneness of being, which is the main subject of being, which is our main, the biggest subject we can think about, the biggest ontological subject we can think of. We can never understand that without understanding first that sense of translation, the identity that is brought out, though the phenomena is always different. Though the oneness of being is brought out in the chapter on prayer in a different way than in the chapter on atonement and Eucharist, and different in the chapter of marriage and so on, in each one the oneness brings forth the phenomena that is not the same as the other phenomena, and yet they are identical if they are translation from a higher level. Therefore, in this way, we can understand that we live in a world with a lot of different phenomena that seems from the outside to be absolutely different or even contradictory. And yet if we look into the depths of it and see that they are translations from a higher level to a lower level, we see that they are identical, and only when we see that identity we have a oneness of being. Yeah?